The next matter on the calendar is in the matter of the welfare of the children of KH and DC. All right, I've just called the matter of the welfare of the children of KH and DC. Council, you'll each have 15 minutes for your oral argument. Please introduce yourself prior to beginning your oral argument, and the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. You may proceed at this time, and feel free if you need to either raise or lower the podium to fit your needs.
May it please the court, opposing counsel, my name is Nicole Groneberg, and I represent appellant in this matter. Appellant comes before you today and respectfully requests that this court overturn the district court's decision terminating his parental rights because the district court abused its discretion in finding that termination serves the best interests of the children in this matter and abused its discretion in finding that the county provided reasonable efforts to reunify the children with their father. With regard to best interests, appellant's theory is simply this. When you have a circumstance where you have a father that has a loving relationship with his children, and that relationship is not harming his children in any way, and the children are placed with a relative that encourages that relationship, believes that relationship serves the best interests of the children, and fully intends to maintain that relationship into the future.
Well, can I just stop you there? Because, I mean, it's an interesting argument, but there's no dispute here, or you're not contesting on appeal, that he is, because of his incarceration until 2026, he's unable to provide for these children himself as the father.
Yes, Your Honor.
And so that's clear. I mean, if in fact we adopt your argument and accept it, I mean, wouldn't any parent be able to do this that's involved with the child protection system? Because the whole purpose of child protection is to make sure that these children's needs are met. And if that's the case, wouldn't they all be able to say, this isn't in the best interest of the child because my child's being taken care of, I can't do it now, but the child's fine now. I mean, wouldn't it kind of turn the whole system on its head? I guess that's, if you can explain your argument a little better.
Respectfully, Your Honor, we do note a very significant distinction between these facts and the facts in a case where the children are placed with a non-relative, and in order to achieve a level of permanency that will benefit them in the long run, there may need to be a severance of that parent-child relationship, notwithstanding the benefits they may lose from that relationship being severed. Additionally, these facts are distinct from a situation where the children may be placed with a relative that does not encourage an ongoing relationship. In that case, in order for the children to achieve a level of permanency that would benefit them in the long term, most benefit them, then again, you may need to sever that parent-child relationship. However, we would submit that these facts are more analogous to any situations outside of the child protection context, in which a parent may be unavailable to take physical custody of children, but there still would be no reason to terminate their parental rights. The case law is clear to that point, Your Honor. That there is no set of facts or circumstances, there is no statutory basis that would permit the district court to forego its analysis of best interest for the children. And that is because that is, of course, the primary focus in these child protection matters and in a termination proceeding.
So what are you envisioning here? I mean, let's take your argument to the next step. What are you envisioning, that there's a temporary placement with the relative until your client is out of prison, and then he can immediately resume his parental role? Is that what you're advocating for here?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. What appellant would request is that the matter be reversed so that custody can be established with the grandmother. That seems to be the only option that truly takes into consideration and serves the best interest of the children.
And if custody is in fact awarded to grandmother, then at such time as your client would be released from prison, he'd have to work a plan or bring it to court in order for him to resume any parenting that he may assert at that time, right?
That is correct, Your Honor. The matter, when there is a transfer of custody in a child protection matter, the county is always to be noticed of any proceeding that would occur with regard to custody in the future. So there would be that safeguard with regard to any kind of transfer of custody back.
Besides best interest, you've argued, and this is what concerns me, is you've argued more so. You've argued that there has not been reasonable efforts. And play out for me what would happen if we agree that there was not reasonable efforts provided to Dad to work his plan. What happens then? I mean, does this case continue and a plan is then provided to him versus to his caseworker? What happens?
Unfortunately, there is not case law that speaks so directly to the issue of what would happen in a case like this where the matter has been open for an extensive period of time. However, there is a legal mandate that those reasonable efforts be provided. So if that is going to be given any effect, then what the law would require is, yes, that the father be given a reasonable opportunity to complete a case plan and demonstrate that he is able to reunify with his children.
I would like to, again, address both arguments. But as I understand the Child Protection Act, it's to achieve permanency for the children, a permanent home where there's consistency and stability. How would we achieve that purpose with your theories in this case? I mean, wouldn't that be contraindicated here? Because you're basically asking that the children be placed with one with a relative, and the permanency would still be up in the air, probably to be readdressed in 2026.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I would disagree that the only permanency option would be a termination of parental rights. The law clearly contemplates, under Minnesota Statute 260C.513, that another permanency option, if it serves the best interest of the children, is transfer of custody. The requirements for that are outlined in 260C.515. And what 513 addresses very directly is if termination is not in the best interest of the children and transfer of custody is in the best interest of the children, which we submit in this case, that is the case, then that is what should happen. And the court had that option available to it at the time of the termination trial, pursuant to Minnesota Statute 260C.513. So there is, transfer of custody is a recognized permanency option, and it should be, because the paramount consideration is not simply permanency. The paramount consideration is best interest, health, safety, welfare, and best interest of these children. And when you have a case where there's a beneficial relationship between the parent and the children, and there's no harm identified, as in this case, where all of the witnesses that testified to that relationship said positive things about that relationship, certainly no harm coming from that relationship, And the grandmother, who intends to continue that relationship, described it as loving. There are potential benefits, clearly, to maintaining a relationship between a parent and children, and potential harm if that is severed. Excuse me.
So I just want to make sure I understand what our standard of review here is.
Yes, Your Honor.
So as between transferring custody to a relative or termination, is this an abuse of discretion standard of review?
It's abuse of discretion for the determination that the district court did not apply or do the proper analysis for best interests. And if there is not a finding of best interest, then there cannot be a termination. It's the same standard for a failure to provide reasonable efforts or a finding for that. But in this case, the district court did not engage in an active analysis of the RTB factors. And in doing so, really failed to give the reviewing court any ability to adequately understand what the court's reasoning was behind the determination that termination was in the best interest. And in this case, we contend that when the district court, if the district court were to have considered the fact that everyone anticipates this relationship to continue, it's not harming the children. And if, for example, there are clear, conceivable harms that could come to these children if they lose that relationship.
Can we talk about the plan, because you're really winding down on your time? You've cited in your brief two recent decisions of the Minnesota Court of Appeals that said a district court commits reversible error by terminating parental rights when the social service agency has not timely filed or provided an out-of-home placement plan. How long was this placement plan delayed as far as getting it to your client?
Well, it was delayed by 9 months. However,
and as I understand it, the social worker wasn't even the one that delivered it to him.
That's correct.
It was given to his case manager at prison, and the case manager didn't explain it to him, just handed it to him and said, I can't advise you, sign or don't sign.
That's correct, who expressly disavowed in testimony that she would ever engage with the client in any kind of advising role with regard to child protection matters.
The social worker in this case, she never visited your client in prison?
That's correct. She, in fact, did not, until very late in the case, after the termination petition was filed, never even took the opportunity to meet with him when he came to numerous hearings throughout the case.
She didn't meet with him then?
Correct.
Well, how was he to be made aware of what specifically to do to fulfill the plan?
So the theory was, notwithstanding,
he signed the plan, right? But he signed it and what, just mailed it back?
He signed it. It was emailed back by the caseworker. By the prison caseworker. I think the theory was that he was given a booklet at orientation.
But not orientation for the CHIPS. He was given the orientation booklet when he was sent to prison. They give you an orientation and say, here's the stuff you can do or not do.
That is correct, yes. And we would argue that that is akin to telling a parent that who's not incarcerated that, notwithstanding the fact that the case plan told you that you couldn't engage in these services, they're not available in the community, you could have figured it out on your own, because
the social worker didn't tell him that, right?
The social worker provided, when the case plan was finally provided to Dad, approximately half the items had a notation saying that he could not engage in the services because they weren't available because he was incarcerated, and that was not accurate.
Did anybody even explain that to him?
Not that there was not evidence presented at trial that was explained to him. What the caseworker stated in her testimony is that she gave him a copy.
Now, are you talking about the prison caseworker?
I'm sorry.
Case manager, or are you talking about the social worker?
The social worker. What the social worker in the child protection matter testified to is that she provided Dad with a copy of that case plan through the prison caseworker, and had a brief conversation with him on the phone where she told him, you know, take a look at the plan and see what you can do with it. And there was no evidence presented that she provided more direction than that. And it was.
So how much time did he have? And help me with the timetable here. Did he get the plan before the TPR was filed, or was it kind of at the same time?
He did get it before the TPR was filed. I believe that's correct, because there was a significant period of time before between the filing and the trial date. But I believe it was before the TPR was filed. However,
But who would have told him then how he was deficient in following that plan? Well, tell me, how was he deficient in following the plan?
So
there was stuff that was notations, this, don't do this, don't do this. What didn't he do then?
So the argument from the county is that there was not such a notation with regard to obtaining a, well, this was in the court's order, a Rule 25 assessment. And that would have been available to him.
So he didn't think he had to get a Rule 25? It was, I'm not understanding. Was that a part of his plan or not a part of his plan?
It was in the case plan. It was under several items indicating that he was not able to engage in the services because he was incarcerated. And then there was a line item for Rule 25 assessment. It did not have that notation. There were then several items after that that he was not able to engage in actual fact because he was incarcerated, such as the family group decision-making meeting, which never took place, and he would have no ability to affect that from incarceration.
Well, could I, because I'm just reading the court's order, and it says that your client knew what services were recommended to him in his case plan, and this is on page 28 of the court's order, if you want to read with me. It's at the top of the page. That he knew what services were recommended to him in his case plan, and he had access to a number of those services at the prison. I'm paraphrasing, obviously. That your client did not engage in any of these services, and that he failed to engage the requisite services despite having access while in custody. So therefore, the court found that he'd failed to rebut the presumption that the court-approved case plan was reasonable.
Would the court like me to respond?
Is that clearly erroneous, or I mean, what are you claiming with regard to this part of the court's order? This was the judge who heard the whole case.
It's clearly erroneous in the sense that the case plan literally tells the client that he is not able to participate in most of the services. And to the extent that they may have been available, he would have had to have assumed that the caseworker was being inaccurate in the case plan and sought out those services on his own through what Miley Tolbert, the caseworker from prison, described as a lengthy reading material. It would be akin to telling a parent they need to navigate their own services
he
in these cases.
It was clear in her testimony that I'm talking about the prison, Tolbert, prison case manager, that she wasn't going to give him any advice on this.
That's correct,
because that wasn't her job.
That is correct, and she did not, based on her testimony.
But wasn't the father represented?
He was, Your Honor, yes. Yes.
I mean, didn't he talk with his attorney about how the system works and how the case plans work and what he was required to do?
He had an opportunity to do that. What I would offer to the court, however, is that in order to understand that these services were available, the attorney would have to have the knowledge that the caseworker should have about what services are in fact available at prison, and would have to work under the assumption that the caseworker was being inaccurate or dishonest in her case plan, in which she states clearly that most of the services are not available. It is not the case that she indicated that he could find those services in prison, or even that she left those items blank. She affirmatively indicated they were not available. And in the TR case, testing...
But the court found there were some of the services available.
They were available, Your Honor.
But your client did not avail himself of those services.
He did not know that they were available.
He didn't know that they were available, or he didn't know he was supposed to avail himself of them?
He did not know they were available. Oh. I mean, and to that point, the law does require that the caseworker sit down, develop the plan with the client, and explain it to them. And the evidence presented at trial does not demonstrate that that happened in this case.
You know, you're way over your time. So I'm going to have you... reserve whatever comments you have for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good Good morning, Your Honors. Jake Murphy, Assistant Ramsey County Attorney, on behalf of the Ramsey County Social Services Department. May it please the court. This case comes before the court as a termination of parental rights challenged as an abuse of discretion by the district court in finding that termination was in the best interest of the children and that the Ramsey County Social Services Department made reasonable efforts in this case.
I want to ask you a question about reasonable efforts, and it follows from what appellant counsel was saying. You acknowledge the Ramsey County social worker is to develop this plan with the parent. That's how it should go down, right?
Yes, Judge.
In this case, he wasn't contacted. The plan was developed with grandma.
It is correct that the county social services worker contacted the grandma in order to develop the case plan. She was candid about that.
Why was she was candid about it, there's no doubt, but we're talking about reasonable efforts. Why did she not either sit down or telephonically speak with dad and say, let's develop a case plan? Why not?
It's clear from the record and the findings of the trial court that the case plan was developed. It met statutory requirements.
Why didn't she meet with dad? That's my question. I realize the plan was developed. He eventually signed it after the prison person gave it to him, but why wasn't dad a part of that whole plan? That bothers me, that he was not a part of shaping the plan, wasn't consulted about the plan, and it wasn't even given to him by the social worker. It came to him by a prison person that says, I'm not going to tell you what this is. Sign it or do what you want.
Judge, he did have the case plan. He had the court-approved case plan.
Again, why was he not, what's in the record to say why he was not a party to that?
On July 16th, 2018, the county social services worker spoke with him over the telephone and did discuss the case plan requirements with him.
After the plan was already created.
Yes, that's correct. However,
after he'd signed the plan, but my question is, why, this is unusual to me, why a parent is not involved in shaping the case plan? And I just can't ferret out why not, except that he was in prison, and that's what bothers me. And if that's the reason, then that's the reason.
Judge, that was the finding of the trial court, was that his incarceration made it difficult for the social worker in order to get in touch with him.
She never went to St. Cloud to see him.
That's correct. The district court found that what the county worker did was reasonable under the circumstances of this case, and that is the standard. That is what the efforts that are required of the worker.
But are you not then saying if a parent is incarcerated, whether it's a mother that's at Shakopee non-perimeter fence or another institution, that because the difficulty of visitation times that you don't have to work with that parent?
Judge, it's the county's position, and the trial court order bears it out, that the county worker did discuss the case plan requirements with him.
After he'd signed it and after it was done.
That's not correct, Judge. They had a telephone conversation, and after that telephone conversation, the appellant signed the plan. And then it was returned by the prison case manager to the county worker, pursuant to that phone conversation. And the trial court found that the county worker was satisfied based on that conversation that the appellant understood the requirements of the case plan and what was expected of him, and that he did not object to any of the requirements in the case plan that occurred during that telephone discussion on July 16th, 2018.
My review of the record indicates the social worker says she acknowledged that she spoke with dad only one time over the phone during the entire CHIPS matter, and that occurred shortly after he went to St. Cloud.
That's correct.
She didn't see him she didn't see him. She spoke with him that one time.
That's correct. That was July 16th, 2018.
Is it common then for a social worker to turn over, abdicate that responsibility as far as working with a parent in any prison setting, as far as what services need to be taken care of? Are they supposed to figure it out? Who's supposed to do that?
Let's face it,
it's a CHIPS case. I'm suspecting that these are people of marginal means or perhaps somewhat limited education.
The social worker works with a variety of people from the community in order to develop and work case plans with their clients. That goes from other social workers, people at schools, people in nonprofit organizations, people at treatment centers, chemical health specialists, and yes, even prison case managers. And in this case, the county social worker was able to finally get a contact person at the DOC who she could coordinate with in order to contact the appellant directly.
But the DOC person said, I never give them advice. I never explain anything to them. And she gave him the document, didn't read it, didn't say this is what it is, just said it. That's your business. I mean, my word's not hers, but sign it or do what you, sign it or throw it away, I think is what she said. Sign it or not.
And that is a fair representation of the record and of the trial court's findings, but that is not as what is required. What's required are reasonable efforts under the circumstances of the case by the social services agency. Once the appellant was convicted of May of 2018 and transferred from a local jail to the DOC, the social worker got in contact with a prison case manager who she could work with in order to contact and make that telephone call on July 16th, 2018.
And what she did, you said she worked with the
That's
prison
correct.
Case manager. What did she do to work with the prison case manager?
So the trial court found that on June 12th, 2018, the county social services worker sent the case plan to the prison case manager. They were coordinating at that point over setting up a telephone call because the appellant
that
is incarcerated.
That was the one call that took place.
No, there was coordination going on between the prison case manager and the county social services worker once appellant was transferred to the DOC, because it was that prison case manager testified that is the correct person for outsiders to coordinate with in order to get in contact with an incarcerated person. It was on July 12, 2018 that the court-approved case plan that was court-approved on June 14, 2018 was sent to appellant while he was incarcerated. The telephone call was then coordinated so that an incarcerated person could be brought out to a telephone and that the telephone call could be made with the county social services worker. And that is what happened on July 16th. It was at that point that the county social services worker explained the requirements of the case plan. And if the court would look at...
Explain to who?
To the appellant, Judge, directly.
Okay, so when you say that the Ramsey County social worker coordinated with the prison case manager. So far I've heard, determined who the person was, the point person, mailed the plan, and then arranged a telephone call, which was a one-time call that she spoke with the parent dad.
Yes.
That's the coordination of efforts?
It is. It was an email, not a... It was, just as a point of fact, it was an email and not... snail mail, so to speak, that went to the appellant while he was incarcerated.
Wait a minute, an email, are you talking about the plan?
Yes.
But it didn't go to appellant, he doesn't get email, so it went to the case manager then said, here, do what you want with this.
That's correct, and so the prison case manager isn't expected to perform the function of the social worker. They are an extension in the community helping to get that information to an incarcerated person.
So now we have the plan that's been was signed and sent back. So what was the continued coordination of efforts between the Ramsey County social worker and the prison DOC employee as far as facilitating this?
The court found that there was programming available at DOC for the appellant to work the case plan.
What did the social worker do? The coordination, you told me there was coordination. As far as reasonable efforts, you talked about the coordination between the social worker and the DOC person.
The social worker cannot order the DOC to provide any particular programming, and it cannot provide them to allow which incarcerated people get into certain programming or how that happens. However, the request for the programming was in the contents of the case plan, and it was on appellant to reach out to his prison case manager, who was his point person, to ask questions about programming in the prison, to ask for what was available to him to work the case plan, and the trial court found that he simply did not do that.
How did the trial court find out that he understood and knew to do that if he'd never met with the social worker? I mean, somebody has to tell people what to do. They just don't get something in the mail and figure it out.
Appellant made his first court appearance in this matter on October 19th, 2017. The termination petition wasn't filed until May 11th, 2018.
But But he didn't have the plan between then, right?
He had the plan beginning January 24th, 2018, as it was served upon him through his counsel. And the court found that he had notice of it and the requirements of the case plan from that date. And then, if that wasn't enough, he certainly had the discussion about the requirements of the case plan by telephone on July 16, 2018. From the earliest time period, on January 24th, 2018, he had 420 days or 14 months to work this case plan. As of the July 16th date, he had 247 days or 8 months to actively work the case plan. And from the time this case came into the County Social Services Agency on September 27th, 2017, until trial on March 20th, 2019, over 20 months had transpired under which appellant had noticed that his children were in need of protection or services.
So in those 20 months, the social worker never visited him in prison to talk about the plan and his responsibilities and talk to him once. And saw him once after a court hearing, although there were numerous court hearings. I struggle with this because, you know, not everyone has the intellect that we have here in this courtroom or the means that we have in this courtroom. And I think, how can people figure this out?
I understand the court's concern. Reasonable efforts aren't only efforts that are provided to appellant directly. They were also for his children. Getting safe and stable housing, a safe, stable place for the children to live, addressing their individual special medical and educational needs, getting clean cribs and other implements for their care to the foster provider. There were medical diagnoses, medical treatment that needed to be provided to one of the children. There were reasonable efforts that were being provided to the children's mother at the same time in the form of programming and services.
Counsel, let me interrupt for a minute. and I do understand what you just said, and you're right, those are reasonable efforts. The issue here is termination of this man's rights to his children, and I think the point Judge Werke has made is it reasonable that a social worker, as she testified in the transcript, was unable to visit him in prison due to the inflexible visitation schedule and visit times falling on her court dates. Shouldn't there be a base, shouldn't there be some kind of a base level where a representative of the county meets face-to-face when the case plan is presented to the individual when we're dealing with something as serious as the termination of his parental rights?
There isn't a specific requirement for a face-to-face meeting, Judge, either in the case law or the statute. How that interfacing takes place isn't addressed in the law. Perhaps if someone was blind, it would be through Braille, or perhaps if they spoke another language, there would be an interpreter. Here we have an incarcerated person who is very difficult to be reached. They were charged with a very serious crime. And so getting in touch with them was difficult for the social worker when they were awaiting trial on what was a relatively high-profile case, a shooting in downtown Minneapolis of an innocent bystander. And so the county worker felt deflected and that she did not have the ability to get in touch with him in local confinement. It wasn't until the conviction in May of 2018 and the movement to DOC that she had a point of contact to get in touch with to try to reach him directly and coordinate with him directly. And during the whole course of that proceeding, the appellant never took seriously his use of illicit chemicals, for example. In July of 2017, after he had dropped his children off with somebody else to take care of them, he was arrested for...
Uncle, when he dropped him off with his uncle when he was homeless, right?
That is correct.
About a 1 month period of time.
And he tested positive for illicit substances in July of 2017 after his arrest for DWI.
Uncle did testify that he called daily, if not more frequently, to inquire about the kids and see what they needed. I mean, he did keep contact with the uncle, trying to figure out what do you need, what can I bring. And I understand the car seats had lice, but I mean, he did keep contact.
The court did not make a credibility determination on that specific testimony in the trial court order. It did note that that was the testimony. However, it did not characterize that. Instead, it's...
That was the inception of the CHIPS. That had nothing to do with the TPR. I mean, well, led to it, but...
Right, because appellant failed to correct the conditions that led to the children's out-of-home placement. The court found that the appellant is removed from his children's current needs and development, that he denied using drugs and alcohol, and that it affected his ability to safely and appropriately parent his children. It found that he has not been able to provide the daily parenting needs of his children for the majority of their lives because of his frequent arrests and periods of incarceration. The court found the twins do not even know their father because he's been incarcerated since they were 7 months old.
Although, even though you're over time, I do need to remark that the grandma presented conflicting testimony and said the twins, she let him listen to his voice on the phone and so on. That wasn't a question. I guess it was just a statement that was not appropriately directed. Thank you.
And were you, I know that your counsel went over 3 minutes, so if you have something you wanted to say in conclusion, you may do so.
The last thing I want to address is this idea of a transfer of custody in our alternative petition. That issue is not before the court. The time period for someone to file an alternative petition is long past. That could have been done early on in this case, and that is not the issue before the court. The issue is whether the trial court abused its discretion in finding it was in the children's best interest to terminate the parental rights of appellant, and whether the county social services agency, under the circumstances of this case, in having provided a written court-approved case plan, explained it to appellant on July 16th, 2018, at which time he was able to make input, a case plan which he signed and which was returned to the county social services department, and trial did not occur until March 20th of 2019. Is not held accountable for doing everything in his power to make sure that he gets his children back.
Thank you.
May it please the court. I want to address a number of the statements made by respondent. First and foremost, the suggestion that the court did not make a credibility determination with regard to the father providing support to the children when they were with their uncle. The court spoke very directly to that issue on page 19 of its order under the conclusions of law, in which the court found that petitioner had failed to prove by clear and convincing evidence that appellant had either refused or neglected to comply with the parental duties imposed upon him by the parent-child relationship. In that section, the court notes that several witnesses indicated that appellant provided support and that he provided a caring and stable home for the children while he was able to do so. He was the primary parent for the children. And that when they were placed with their uncle, that he did provide for them financially. Additionally, the statement that the trial court found that incarceration made it difficult for the caseworker to meet with appellant. We would submit that that is not what is represented in the court's order. What is represented in the court's order is that the court seemed highly skeptical of the claims made by the social worker that she was unable to meet with the client because the intake worker had in fact met with the client earlier.
And I want to talk about that because the judge did say this wasn't the model for, providing services
that
to incarcerated. I mean, he did acknowledge that. But at the same time, he said, he was supposed to do parenting classes. He was supposed to get some chemical dependency treatment. He was supposed to do a psychological assessment. He was to, do a parenting assessment. And I'm just looking back at the facts that the court found that you have not indicated are clearly erroneous, that Mrs. Tolbert told him about the parenting education. That's one thing she acknowledged. She tells every parent who comes in to the prison system that they can attend parenting classes. So she told him about that. I think the court also found, and I'm looking at the court's order, that there were chemical dependency treatment programs. There was apparently some mental health programs in the prison. But there was no indication that your client took advantage of any of these services that were offered in the prison.
Yes, Your Honor, and there is also no indication that my client was aware that a number of those services you just mentioned were offered through the prison. With regard to the offering of parenting classes, yes, Miley Tolbert testified. She assumes that she did offer them upon entry into the facility because that's what she always does. However, that is not the same as a caseworker indicating that this is something that you need to do because it's part of your case plan. And it's not clear that, based on the record, that appellant understood his case plan because it is not clear to what extent it was explained to him. And it certainly wasn't explained to him until way too late based on the statutory
timeline.
Well, he
didn't have input in developing it.
And
if you don't know, if you create something, you at least have a little greater awareness of what the plan is.
It would aid in the understanding, certainly. And to that point, the law requires that the caseworker develop or the social worker develop that plan with the parent. It is not a requirement that the social worker develop that plan with other members of the community, but the parent is required. That is significant, so that the plan is something that is substantive and reasonable for the parent.
But here's what I want to get out. At what point, I mean, the judge balanced all this evidence and said, I think in light of the fact there were these programs offered, that he actually, he mentioned the GED program, he started that, but he was unable to finish that because he had some misconduct issues in the prison and was placed in segregation. In light of that, I mean, how would we write an order reversing the judge because we can't substitute our balancing of this evidence?
Of course, Your Honor. But based on the district court's own findings with regard to the lack of communication with the client about what is required of him, and the fact that the case plan literally indicated he was not able to participate in many of these services, including mental health services, at that point, that the court said, these are the facts, and that constitutes reasonable efforts, that was an abuse of discretion, because it does not constitute reasonable efforts to rehabilitate a parent and reunify with children. That is not what the facts support. It is not reasonable that the social worker would not meet with the parent throughout the case until after the termination petition is filed. That's not reasonable, and the court itself did not accept the explanation given by the caseworker. At that point at which the court doesn't accept that explanation and is saying these efforts are more or less abysmal, yet they're reasonable, that's an abuse of discretion. And on that basis, appellant respectfully requests that this court reverses the order terminating appellant's rights on the basis that the district court abused its discretion in finding that reasonable efforts were provided to rehabilitate and reunify the parent in this matter, and that termination served the best interests of the children. Thank you.
All right, thank you. We will take the matter under advisement, and this is an expedited case, so we will have a decision within 45 days. Thank you.